From KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jay Barrett. Coming up this week, we hear how fishermen can maximize their profits by minimizing their boat's energy usage. Folks in Kodiak are trying to ease the way for the coming and going of anadromous fish, and we hear more from the new head of the Bering Sea Crabbers, all on this edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
As we told you last week, Tyson Fick has been named executive director of the Alaska Bering Sea Crabbers, an industry group that represents most of the crab fishermen working in federal waters off of Alaska. He'll replace Mark Gleason, who resigned earlier this year. KUCB's Laura Craigle spoke with Fick about his new job, this year's controversial Tanner Crab closure, and the decision to open an ABSC office in Alaska.
You have a lot of experience in Alaska seafood and fisheries, but for crabbers and other industry members who don't know you, what is your background?
Well, my experience in the seafood industry began when I was a teenager, and I worked for my uncle in Kenai, working in processing and unloading boats, and I've been around it ever since in a number of different capacities. Most recently, I'm the communications director at the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute. Before that, was legislative liaison at the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. Just kind of been around it and interested in fisheries and working on boats and in processing off and on my whole life.
And so what drew you to this position now with the Alaska Bering Sea Crabbers?
That's a really exciting opportunity to work with an iconic fishery and one that really lifts up the entire Alaska seafood brand that I've been working with for years now. And it's a small amount of seafood compared to the 5.5 billion pounds or so that come from Alaska every summer. It's only tens of millions. So I feel like this is a fantastic opportunity to build off what I've done here, but then also focus to a smaller group and a specific product in a real comprehensive way that includes marketing and PR, but also policy advocacy.
That said, what are some of the big issues that matter to the crab fleet right now?
Well, right now, the biggest issue ahead of us is the consideration of whether or not there's going to be a Bairdyke crab fishery this season. There's a proposal in front of the Board of Fish in January that would take into consideration whether or not to accept an emergency order that would allow for a fishery in the Western District. That's a pretty big decision, tens of millions of dollars with the potential of, you know, being a $150 million decision if the fishery wound up being closed for 3 years.
So the Board of Fisheries will make the final decision on that at their meeting in Kodiak in the new year. And a lot of people are waiting with bated breath in Alaska, Bristol Bay. Do you have any idea if they're going to allow an opening?
I really don't. I wish I did. The communication between industry and fish and game has certainly improved. Whether or not that means that we can manage to have a fishery this year is completely unknown at this point. But there does seem to be some interest in a long-term revisiting of the harvest strategy, and we would look forward to working with them on that.
And if taking another look at the overall harvest strategy for crab is one of your long-term goals, what else is on that list?
So there's a wide range of issues that we would be interested in, from federal DC issues that include IUU, illegal, unreported, and unregulated fishery activity, primarily looking at like Russian pirate crab entering the U.S. and how to combat that. You know, there's issues like country of origin labeling. There's issues statewide fish and game funding, for instance. It's just a really broad and interesting workload.
You mentioned state issues, and you're going to be based in Juneau. Have the Bering Sea Crabbers always had an office in Juneau?
There has not. That does mark a change for the organization, and I'm excited to see that happen. Even though the fleet's largely based out of Seattle, there's a real interest to be rooted in Alaska.
And when you were deciding to expand beyond Seattle and into Alaska, why pick Juneau?
Well, a lot of what's happening that the group would be interested in is happening in Juneau right now. The well-publicized state budget crisis, for instance. it's really important both for the state of Alaska and for the Alaska Bering Sea crabbers to ensure that we continue to adequately fund Fish and Game and NOAA and really take seriously the stock assessment and ensure that we have healthy fisheries.
And the stock assessments are a really big deal this year. The trawl survey showed low numbers for a lot of different species. Quotas were cut kind of across the crab fisheries, and some were even canceled. But when you talk to fishermen themselves, they're saying, a lot of them, that there's plenty of crab in the water. So are you also hearing about that disconnect between the fishermen and the managers?
Yeah, we definitely hear about it. And that's why we would be interested in looking at improving the long-term crab harvest strategy, tanners, as well as red king crab, really anywhere that the science can be improved. How to get past that, I don't know. Like you say, there's a seems to be a disconnect between what the fishermen are seeing on the grounds and what's happening at the summer trawl surveys. These are all things that we would hope to work with the scientific community, both at Fish and Game as well as at NOAA and the North Pacific Fishery Management Council. Want to just have the best information possible.
That was Tyson Fick, the new director of Alaska Bering Sea Crabbers, speaking with KUCB's Laura Kragel.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by AK Teach, now enrolling K-12 homeschool students throughout the state of Alaska, creating partnerships that are flexible, family-friendly, and unique to your child. More information is available at AK Teach or at 907-942-0667.
Groups in Kodiak are pursuing the replacement of numerous culverts along the island's roughly 100-mile road system. The culverts ensure the easy passage of salmon from stream to ocean to stream again, and their upkeep means the continued health of the salmon population. KMXT's Kayla DeRoche went along to see some of the current and future culvert locations around Orban Lake.
Blythe Brown from the Kodiak Soil and Water Conservation District leads me down a snowy bank to see a culvert in Bell's Flats that had been replaced in 2015.
Right here. Oh, wow. Okay.
So this one was originally a 3-foot diameter steel culvert pipe under the road that was too small for the amount of water that needed to come through here. It was in poor shape. I think this was even the one that had like a hole in the top of the culvert and things like that. So it's been replaced with a 7-foot diameter. You come around over here and see.
It's a ridged pipe with long grass flowing in the water on either end. Culverts are designed to mimic natural habitat, which means replanting vegetation and covering the bottom of the culvert with rocks. Soon after visiting this site, we head over to a nearby creek where the planning for another culvert replacement is ongoing. There are two surveyors there gathering data to inform the design. Rich Faniff from Interfluve Incorporated in Oregon stands behind a machine mounted on a tripod. He says it's calibrating the distance between itself and a control point.
We're trying to survey to develop a topographic map and to understand the hydraulics of this drainage, sort of the hydraulics that are going through the culvert, to get an understanding of what size the culvert needs to be, what slope the culvert needs to be in order to accommodate fish passage.
Since the creek is on Kodiak Island borough land, Brown says the borough contributed funding, but it's a group effort among different partners. She says the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is looking at some other culverts on the Kodiak Road system. They haven't secured funding for those yet, but Brown says they're doing the preliminary surveys and assessments for the designs so that they can replace the culverts when the money comes through. I'm Kayla DeRoche.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their family. AMSEA at amsea.org or 907-747-3287.
Commercial fishermen are largely at the whim of the seafood market. Prices can vary widely while operation costs stay the same or can go up. That is until now. As KCAW's Emily Russell reports, an energy audit aims to help fishermen increase their profit margins.
It's a sunny morning in Sitka. Usually Steve Fish, yes, that's his real name, would be out on his boat, the Cariel, trolling for salmon or longlining for black cod or halibut. But today, the 66-foot fishing vessel and its captain are parked in the harbor. Fish has surrendered the Cariel to a swarm of engineers who can't help but ask how his gear works. Fish obliges.
The fish hits the crucifier, and then the winch, as it's hauling the gear, pulls the hook out of the fish's mouth.
They're all aboard the Cariel today to conduct an energy audit of the vessel. Fish, along with 17 other fishermen in Sitka, volunteer to take part.
Yeah, it's dollars and cents.
And for Fish and most others in the industry, each year those dollars and cents are spent at the pump.
You know, we might use somewhere in the neighborhood of 10,000 gallons.
Do you know how much that costs you?
between $20,000 and $50,000, depending on the price of diesel.
One obvious way to cut costs is with a more efficient engine, but Mike Gaffney says there are other less expensive avenues as well. He's an engineer based in Virginia and usually works on larger ships like cruise liners and Coast Guard cutters.
This is my first episode with fishing vessels, so that's why I keep asking how the operations work.
Gaffney was brought up to help with the Fishing Vessel Energy Efficiency Project. That's a joint effort by the Alaska Longline Fishermen's Association and the Alaska Fisheries Development Foundation. Gaffney is collecting a baseline of data, how much energy, say, a vessel like the Cariel uses day to day. Gaffney climbs down the narrow ladder into the Cariel's engine room.
And of course, there's lots of room in here to move around.
He's joking. The space, it's tiny. Gaffney tucks himself up against the electric panel and runs wires between it and his power quality analyzer, or PQA, which resembles a clunky, oversized calculator.
It is the Hiyoki 3197 model. That one is sexy.
He starts with the vessel's lighting, recording amperage, voltage, and power factor.
So we're going to measure what he's currently drawing, and then we see how long he actually keeps them on. We'll figure out what his annual cost is for operating these lights to see if it's cost-effective to switch to LEDs.
Right now, the vessel uses high-pressure sodium lights, which Gaffney says have a long warm-up period. So fishermen tend to just turn them on and leave them on.
Also, every time you cycle them on and off, it shortens the life of the bulb.
That's not the case for LEDs. There's no warm-up time, and it doesn't hurt to turn them on and off. And they're brighter, Gaffney adds.
If you put a LED lighting in this engine room, it'll brighten it way up.
For fishermen, though, that's not always a good thing. Some complain about the light being too blue, too harsh on the eyes. Another problem unique to fishermen, especially in Alaska, LEDs don't heat up the way other bulbs do, which means more ice buildup on the outside lighting. It's the data, but also these insights that make the project unique.
I don't know of anybody who's doing this type of work on fishing boats.
Chandler Kemp is an engineer based in Sitka. He's compiling all of Gaffney's data and writing up reports for the 18 vessels that volunteered for the audit. Kemp says the end goal is an online tool for fishermen.
It'll be a kind of an online interface that people can go on to easily access the information that we've collected and enter in a little bit of information about their boat, say the fisheries they participate in, the length, the engine size.
The tool, which Kemp expects will be released in 2017, will then generate ways to make the vessel more efficient. And for fishermen, that means more profitable. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Emily Russell.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
And that's all for this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from KUCB's Laura Craigle in Unalaska, KMXT's Kayla DeRoche in Kodiak, and KCAW's Emily Russell in Sitka. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett.